wokeness is just like all the other occupiers down in the lower 48 in the world. You know, we stick with it until things get done.
The Hardy Occupy protest in Fairbanks. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, January 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, drilling ice cores outside of Nome to assess conditions for the fuel delivery.
There's a strong chance that it is sitting on the ground. If that's the case, then it represents something stable, ice that's going to kind of be relied upon not to break away.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years.
Alaska's Attorney General has given the governor's office until February 20th to release the last of Sarah Palin's emails from her time as governor. The extension was requested by Randy Ruaro, deputy chief of staff to current governor Sean Parnell. Ruaro said without an extension, responding to requests for the emails would substantially impair the other functions of the governor's office, as well as the ability to properly and thoroughly review the messages. Last June, the state released 24,199 pages of emails from Palin's first 21 months in office in response to public records requests first made in September 2008 after Palin was chosen as the GOP vice presidential nominee. The final emails are from October 1, 2008 to July 26, 2009, when Palin resigned as governor. The Occupy movement has continued into the new year in communities across the United States. In Fairbanks, a small but steadfast group of Occupy protesters has maintained a presence at a downtown park since mid-October. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the movement is developing and sharing its message in and beyond Fairbanks.
The snow is a little deeper and their tents a little saggier, but the Occupy Fairbanks camp is alive at Veterans Memorial Park next door to City Hall. The temperature dipped past minus 40 in Fairbanks Tuesday, the first real cold snap since similar readings were logged in November. The long weeks of winter have not deterred Occupy Fairbanks protesters, like University of Alaska Fairbanks student Ethan Sinzabaugh. Sinzabaugh says a core group of five or six aren't giving up.
This is just like all the other occupiers down in the lower 48 in the world. You know, we stick with it until things get done.
Sinzabaugh and others aren't just hanging out waiting for change. He says they're working on state legislation aimed at reducing corporate influence on government, including reintroduction of the Clean Elections Act.
It was on the ballot a couple of years ago in 2008, and it kind of failed. But we think now that everybody sees how corrupt the system kind of is, if we tweak it a little bit and bring it into this next ballot that's coming up, something like that, and then we're working on the People's Rights Amendment, get rid of that corporate personhood thing. It's going to clearly define a person as a human being and not like a corporate entity. And that's what we're working on. We're working on state legislation to remove that corporate politic thing on a state level first, and then you go from there.
Sinzabaugh says Occupy Fairbanks has attracted attention from similar groups in other places. He says a local cell phone number dedicated to the group has received calls from all over, including an invitation to come help out at Occupy protest camps in New York.
Starting with Occupy Rochester and talk to a couple of the groups upstate and then going down to Wall Street, if they're still around, and talk about winter camping and different strategies and how to communicate with other groups, specifically like so-called conservative groups like the Tea Partiers and things like that, you know, because we've been doing so well bridging that gap up here. It's how, you know, what can they do to do it down in Lower 48? How can they communicate with these people too? And destroy that illusion that we're a leftist group.
Sinzabaugh, who leaves for New York next week, says Occupy Fairbanks is forging some surprising alliances, including with local Tea Party and libertarian groups like the Free Range Patriots, co-writing articles and appearing together on talk radio. Assemblymember Natalie Howard has been especially receptive. Howard, known for her libertarian views, says the Occupy protests show people are starting to wake up.
People know that something's wrong within our government system, within our society, within our economy. And they're at least out there trying to find ways to express this.
Howard says the Occupy movement is appealing because it hasn't been co-opted by any particular political persuasion.
There's no leader, no message that any one group can cut the head off on. They are basically encompassing many different things across the board. And some things I may agree with and some things I may not agree with personally. But I think that there's kind of a beauty in that because you can start to learn and develop your message.
Howard is supportive of the Occupy Fairbanks members' right to maintain their protest at Veterans Park, saying they aren't committing any crimes. Protesters have been issued a notice by the North Star Borough that they will be fined for destroying grass under their tents. Mayor Luke Hopkins says if protesters ignore the notice, a next step could be legal action, but he does not want to go there. The borough does not have police powers, and its attorney has expressed concern about selective code enforcement. Occupy Fairbanks Sinzabaugh says they have no plans to move and are in contact with an American Civil Liberties Union attorney. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Voters in Kivalina have overwhelmingly said yes to building a school at a new location. Kivalina City Clerk Marilyn Swan says the unofficial count in Tuesday's election was 107-11 in favor of the proposed school site about 7 miles northeast of the current Inupiat Eskimo community. Kivalina Administrator Janet Mitchell is hoping the support adds new life to relocate the entire community. She says a feasibility study must now be done to see if the location would work. Funding for the school would stem from a recent agreement by the state to settle a lawsuit that alleged inequities in funding for rural public schools. Kivalina has more than 400 people and is located 625 miles northwest of Anchorage. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an otter who was found in an unusual location goes back to the wild.
A good Samaritan came across the Corky on the Kenai Spur Highway in Mile 5.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
The Renda is on its way to Nome. The tanker departed Dutch Harbor this morning at 9:50 with the icebreaker Healy close behind. They are now steaming north through 380 miles of open water before hitting the ice edge. Coast Guard Petty Officer Kip Wadlow says the vessels will be near each other for the open water transit, cruising at up to 10 to 12 knots.
I believe they're going to stay within close contact with each other. That way, when they arrive at the ice edge, they're getting there at approximately the same time and location and can immediately begin breaking ice and starting the transit to Nome.
Wadlow says the vessels will have 340 miles of ice to plow through. The fuel could arrive in Nome sometime around Sunday, depending on the progress through the ice. Vitus Marine CEO Mark Smith says his team is putting their efforts toward the final delivery in Nome.
The Healy and the Renda, I think, have plenty of capabilities, so we're expecting that they'll work out the most advantageous course considering the weather. So we're focusing on basically the planning for the transfer in Nome, getting all of the parts and pieces ready for that endeavor.
What happens at port, however, is still not finalized. The ice conditions for the final stretch and a ruling by the Department of Environmental Conservation will determine the details of offloading fuel. 5 days before the anticipated delivery, researchers from the Geophysical Institute at the University of Alaska Fairbanks were drilling ice cores to get a better understanding of ice conditions. Assistant Research Professor Andy Mahoney said his priority was assessing a pressure ridge that formed at the very end of the breaker at the entrance to the harbor. Above the surface, it's 5 feet high, but below the surface, it extends further down.
We're expecting this pressure ridge to be about maybe 25 feet thick. The water in this region is right around that depth, so
There's a strong chance that it is sitting on the ground. If that's the case, then it represents something stable, ice that's going to kind of be relied upon not to break away. So that's a good thing for the ship operations here.
Ice stability is crucial, as delivery plans could include offloading fuel with the tanker moored outside the harbor with hose running across the ice. Ice cores taken by the team will be melted and tested for salinity. By knowing the composition of the ice, officials will be able to determine the best course of action and equipment for unloading the fuel from the Renda into Nome's tanks. The price of the fuel to customers in Nome after the upcoming fuel delivery is still to be determined. Nomites may be spared the cost of gas at $9 a gallon, but the operation to deliver fuel with icebreaker support is not cheap for the government agencies involved. KNOM's Ben Matheson has the story.
For the first ever winter fuel delivery in Western Alaska, dozens of people from all levels of government are working every day on the mission, and the Coast Guard has extended the deployment of its only working icebreaker by a month. The government's expenditures to support the operation may approach or surpass the money saved by consumers by not flying in fuel. The Coast Guard is not specifying the exact cost of extending the icebreaker Healy's deployment. Commander Chris O'Neill is the Chief of Media Relations for the Coast Guard in Washington, D.C. He says the Guard will be dipping into contingency funds that are often used to cover responses to events like natural disasters.
There are any number of contingency operations for which the Coast Guard responds to, and we have a capability within our budget to absorb some of those contingency operation expenses. So the extension of the Healy from its patrol doesn't equate to a need to seek further funding.
The Healy's annual operating budget stands at $28 million. That covers support for her crew of 80 and the costs to fuel and maintain her. The Coast Guard also publishes a list of reimbursable standard rates. If it has to charge outside entities or other government agencies for the use of its assets, O'Neill says the rates include labor, benefits, fuel, maintenance, and depreciation.
An attempt to try and capture what it would cost to operate an asset on an hourly basis. And really the genesis for that comes from when we work in a response where part of that is going to get billed to another agency or to a third party.
Coast Guard spokesperson Sarah Francis in Kodiak says the Healy's rates are similar to the cost of a 378-foot cutter. The hourly rate listed for inside government use is $12,974. The cost at that rate for 10 days, the anticipated length of the mission from Dutch Harbor to Nome and back, is around $3 million. 10 days at the outside government rate is $4.1 million. That amount could exceed the extra costs of flying in fuel. The hourly rates are intended to capture the costs of operating assets for a given amount of time. But O'Neill says that's not the best method for determining the cost of a mission.
But it's really not an accurate depiction of how much does it cost to operate that vessel. The better, more accurate snapshot of what does it cost to operate a vessel is that annual budget for those operations. In this particular case, the $28 million to operate the Healy.
The Coast Guard has already incurred some direct extra costs by delaying the Healy's journey to Seattle for pre-scheduled work.
If we are able to get the Healy back for its scheduled maintenance by the 10th of February, the cost could be as much as an additional $200,000. If we get it back before the 10th of February, it could be less than that.
More penalties are possible if there are delays beyond February 10th. O'Neill says despite the dramatic nature of the delivery, the mission fits in with the Coast Guard's mandate to support maritime commerce.
As big a story as this is, it's certainly within the fabric of the Coast Guard, within the fabric of our history. The Coast Guard has a long and storied history of service to Alaska and to the region, and we're proud to continue that tradition today.
The Coast Guard contribution is one of the most visible, but there are hundreds of man hours being tallied at agencies like NOAA, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, Customs and Border Protection, as well as the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the City of Nome. Nome's harbor master, who typically takes winters off, worked through December and is back in town today. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
The 90 or so people who work for Boeing in the interior got a late Christmas present Friday when the Pentagon awarded a 7-year, $3.5 billion contract to the company to operate the Fort Greely base missile defense system. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports from Delta Junction.
Like most Boeing employees here in Delta Junction, Rose Bamberger says she's relieved that her company has again been awarded the multi-billion dollar contract to operate the missile base at Fort Greely and other associated missile defense facilities around the country.
We moved here 5 years ago to work with Boeing out here on missile defense, and so we're thankful that we can stay. And now we're looking forward to the next 5 years.
The ground-based mid-course defense contract, known as the GMD contract, has created hundreds of jobs in the Delta area and statewide since construction of the base began 10 years ago. Boeing has held the contract throughout and has been paid some $18 billion since January 1, 2001. Lockheed Martin wanted a piece of that action and competed against Boeing for the GMD contract. The two aerospace giants went at it for more than a year. And the contract award was delayed twice, last summer and again in November, as federal officials carefully reviewed the two companies' highly complex offers. Lockheed Martin officials haven't said whether they'll ask the Missile Defense Agency to review the contract award. A Lockheed spokeswoman said in an email Tuesday that the company won't have much to say until after federal officials provide a debriefing on the contract award. Officials with Alaskan Aerospace Corporation also are looking forward to a debriefing from Lockheed. The Anchorage-based company had teamed with Lockheed and was counting on GMD subcontracting to help boost business. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. 8 hours after you quit smoking, your blood oxygen level returns to normal. In 3 months, your lung function improves up to 30%. And 10 years after you quit, your risk of dying from lung cancer is about half that of a smoker. But right now, you're one cigarette closer to cancer. Every cigarette makes you sick, so quit smoking today. Information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Anchorage skier Keegan Randall took home a World Cup silver medal today in the skate sprint in Toblach, Italy. She finished just behind Norway's Marit Bjørgen. The competition was part of the 9-stage event called the Tour de Ski. Today's silver medal pushed Randall from 7th place to 4th overall for the 11-day tour. In a U.S. skiing press release, Randall was quoted saying, "It was a challenging course, and with 5 races in my legs already, I was happy to be on the podium." Yesterday, Randall turned in her worst result for the Tour de Ski, finishing 29th in a 3.3-kilometer classic race. A crowd of about 30 people who braved chilly temperatures at the tip of the Homer Spit Monday morning were treated to a rare sight, the release of a fully rehabilitated sea otter back into the wild. KBBI's Aaron Selbig has the story about Corky, the otter who recovered after being found on the side of the Kenai Spur Highway in November.
Despite chilly temperatures and icy waters that forced a last-minute location change from Mud Bay to the tip of the Homer Spit, Alaska Sea Life Center stranding coordinator Tim Lebling says the release of Corky the sea otter couldn't have gone better.
One of the volunteers called from Land's End and said that there was about 10 or 12 otters right off the spit there, so we decided we were going to go out there. And I'll tell you, as soon as we opened the back of the door and Corky was able to view the ocean and maybe even the otters, I think he knew that, you know, he was headed back to where he belonged. And so we set the cage down and opened the cage, and he spent absolutely zero time and beelined it to the ocean and did a couple dives. He definitely kind of seemed that he knew exactly where he was.
A gathered crowd of about 30 people looked on as Corky swam near some of the other otters, making himself at home in Ketchumak Bay. Lebling says it was a long journey for Corky, who was found about a month ago under very unusual circumstances.
We originally had gotten a call from Fish and Wildlife in Kenai. A good Samaritan, along with a trooper, came across Corky on the Kenai Spur Highway in Mile 5, which was what we figured was about 12 to 14 miles upstream.
Why the otter decided to travel so far up the Kenai River is anyone's guess. But Sea Life Center scientists theorize that it may have been because he was sick and confused, perhaps even thinking the sound of traffic on the highway was the sound of the ocean. When Corky was finally brought in to the Sea Life Center in Seward, staff members quickly found out that he had harmful bacteria in his blood, the same bacteria that causes a condition in otters known as valvular endocarditis, or lesions in the heart valves and or the heart itself. Valvular endocarditis has been affecting otters in the Ketchikan Bay area for at least 5 years, says Lebling.
We get lots of calls about otters that are dragging their hind end on the beach, or they're compromised in their hind end. And essentially what has happened is that those lesions has slowed the blood supply up into the most distal part of the otter, which is the hind end, and caused a saddle thrombus or a blood clot in their hind end. And so that's one of the first signs of that it is this valvular endocarditis.
Rescued otters that come into the Sea Life Center with the condition do not usually survive, says Lebling, and only four, including Corky, have ever been able to return to the wild. Although Corky's kidneys were in really bad shape when he came in, Lebling says he was able to recover because he was so young, only about 9 months old, and the disease was still treatable with a 2-week regimen of antibiotics.
And I'll tell you, the day that we got back the results showing that there was no more bacteria in the blood system, I believe it was very close to Christmas time. So I think that was definitely his Christmas gift to us, to the fact that he was healthy.
Alaska Sea Life Center staff members have been distributing flyers among local Homer fishermen and on their Facebook page, asking folks to keep an eye out for Corky and to report any sightings of him. The otter should be clearly distinguishable, says Lebling. He has two tags, one pink and one teal, attached to his flippers. The tags should be visible to the naked eye.
And our hopes are that we'll continue to get reports of him with these flipper tags as he's floating on his back and has his hind feet up in the air. And, you know, in a perfect world, we would get reports for years to come.
The Sea Life Center asks that any Corky sightings be reported to their stranding hotline at 1-888-774-7325. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
If you're considering how to peel off some extra pounds after all those Christmas cookies and festive dinners, a young Alaskan has a simple suggestion. Just move. 21-year-old Jonas Ely did a lot more than that last fall when he ran across the nation more than 3,000 miles with his uncle, a naturopath doctor. They ran to raise awareness of what naturopathic medicine is and had conversations in the communities they traveled through about the importance of being healthy.
Obesity is all-time high, diabetes, Alzheimer's, heart disease, all these diseases that are preventable, that you can prevent just by having a healthier lifestyle. So we just kind of jumped into that, tell them what we're doing, and then we start talking to them about naturopathic medicine and, you know, its alternative from pharmaceutical drugs and surgery and how it works really well. And we wouldn't bash, you know, conventional medicine or MDs. We're just saying you can use both, and it's a balance. They work very well together, and it doesn't have to be one or the other. And you can use both and have a good healthy life.
And at some point, your group, The Run, started to gain quite a bit of attention. How did that come about? When did that start?
Probably, I want to say, well, Anchorage, Alaska has been awesome, because probably we went to Washington, D.C., and in D.C., we met with different senators and congressmen, and I didn't have an appointment with Murkowski or Begich, so I was like, that's ridiculous. If I'm here, I don't meet them. So I just walked into their offices and pitched them my story, and, you know, they came out and met me, which was real cool. And I met Murkowski, and then through Murkowski, her communications director, Matt Felling, I met him. He loved the story, and he used to work at Channel 11, so he gave me some, called them, got some interviews with them, and then, you know, small towns, we'd have go to the newspaper. It's like the biggest thing that hit the town for like 10 years, so the newspaper guy would come out at the bar, at the restaurant, interview us there, and then so probably at the end, we got a lot more awareness, I'd say.
What was the most, I'm sure there was lots of great memories,
yeah,
but what were some of the, you know, the really big highlights?
Running the Rocky Mountains was awesome. Running, we got to like 10,000 feet in the Rocky Mountains. It's like 90 degrees out, just awesome. It's perfect. That was a highlight for sure. And then running in our finish in Bridgeport, Connecticut, there's a naturopathic school there. Running to there was just unbelievable because they had probably about 50 students all there with run with our run t-shirts on, all have bells and just had a huge banner we ran through. And then they had like the dean there, a governor proclamation. That was real cool and just a lot of good support. So that's cool. And then crazy story, probably, I think it was our 13th day actually in, you know, Nevada in the desert, and our RV broke down. So we had to go about 20 miles by ourselves without water. And we're in the middle of the desert, you know, walking on railroad tracks. A train stopped by to get us like water and food. And then we get a call from our driver and she said, don't ask for any help from someone in a red truck because there's a known serial killer in the area. So that was one of the crazier days.
It was a good thing you were running, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think that some people sort of overthink how to be healthy? It seems like, you know, we're inundated with ads about join this club or do this or buy this machine. And I wonder at times if people just get overwhelmed and think, well, I can't do all this. I can't afford it. So I'm not going to do anything. And what would you say to folks that are feeling that way?
That's our main thing. We got to take it back to the basics. It's not rocket science. It's how to be healthy. You just have to eat healthy. And we just have to move more, honestly. We just have to move. The Amish people are some of the most healthiest people in the world. It's because they eat healthy and raw food, and they walk everywhere. It's basic, you know. You just got to eat healthy and move. You don't have to join a club. You don't have to be a special diet. Just you got to be aware of what you're eating and how much you eat compared to how much you move. So it's pretty basic stuff.
And what would you say to someone who's feeling like, oh, boy, I don't know, I haven't done anything in years, and it just seems like I don't think I'm, you know, 60 pounds overweight, and I just don't know if I can rein this back now. Yeah. It's too far on the other side. What would you say to encourage them?
It's simple. You just got to do it. That's like, I don't know, the biggest enemy is ourselves. You know, you just have to, you got to do it, you know. Try and fail, then fail to try. It's kind of cliche, but that's the reality of it. Just got to get off your couch and just go do it.
Jonas Ely is a naturopath enthusiast and is promoting the idea of getting healthy through running. He says he might not run across the country again, but relays or other race ideas are being discussed. Links to information about the next big run are at our website, alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ben Matheson and Matthew Smith in Nome, Tim Ellis in Delta, and Aaron Selbig in Homer. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by Atwood Foundation and Alaska Children's Trust. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD. Also, paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.